Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's that time of year again, and all eyes are now on pro basketball and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline.ag has all the betting action. In the NBA, the conference races are heating up as teams prepare to make their run for the playoffs. And if baseball's your first love, BetOnline has you covered. If you love hockey, golf, MMA, and championship boxing, BetOnline has it all. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to place and check in on all your favorite sports bets all the time. Head to the website or use your mobile device and bring home the game with BetOnline. Let's talk shades and Kanon. Japanese optics make Kanon's lenses clearer, lighter, and stronger than other lenses. They're Italian-made frames. They only make polarized lenses, and their lenses are very hard to scratch. I should know. I took a pair running the other day. Thanks for sending me a pair, Kanon. They look great. They feel great. I recommend them. Kanon only designs and manufactures high-performance eyewear to be clearly better than any sunglasses you've tried before. Use the code KanonCast15. Use this code and receive 15% off your first pair. You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Sports Drink Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. All right, what's up, Pels fans? Welcome to the Bird Calls podcast. I'm your host, Preston Ellis, and we are on a winning streak. How exciting. David said, I think it's like the fourth one we've had in the past 2 or 3 years. I'll have him touch upon it in a second. Anyway, it's also been a roller coaster of late with really good victories over the 76ers, the Celtics, and the Mavericks, sprinkled in with some not great victories or losses to the Orlando Magic and the Atlanta Hawks, in addition to some near to late game collapses. So it's kind of been all over the place. But to talk about all of this and how the Pelicans have managed to stay afloat despite a rash of injuries and where they currently sit as the standings are right now, we have the editor-in-chief to thebirdwrites.com, the so universally beloved, the only thing he beefs with is a full poop bin in the Ottoman Park, Mr. Ali Cosell. What's up, sir?
What's up, guys? Nothing. My big news of the day was the fact that I finally made it out to Kevin's restaurant, Nola Crawfish King. I'm telling you what, I just got a couple sandwiches thinking, okay, let's have a couple decent sandwiches. They're better than I expected. I mean, I'm not lying. I'm not trying to prop up just because Kevin's our buddy. Food is legit. So anybody that lives in the area and you're in the mood for either crawfish, good, like any kind of New Orleans kind of flavored foods, to any kind of lunch meats, go over there to Gentilly. They will take care of you. Trust me, you'll love it.
What did you order?
For Shannon and I got a chicken sandwich called the Foghorn. It's kind of on the spicy side. It's laced with some, I think, sriracha and a few other peppers and all that. And a Reuben. I'm a big Reuben guy. So I tried that. Best corned beef kind of brisket I've ever had. It was moist. You know, normally that stuff is kind of dry. If you guys have ever eaten Reubens, this one was spot on.
I just want to apologize to our listeners because you are about to be hit with a tidal wave of my personal ad readings. So thanks for sticking with us on this one and propping up Kevin's Kevin's brand new business. Make sure you go out and support him. We also have number one, Bird Rights contributor. Number two, host to Harden the Paint podcast, formerly of his own radio show. Number three, analyst on ESPN, dog dad, former contributor to Crescent City Sports. He has so many hats and job titles. He's currently looking to hire an intern. Mr. David Grubb, how are you, sir?
Busy. Busy. That's how I am, but I'd rather be busy than not, and I'm doing what I love to do, so that's all you can ask.
Hey, man.
Tomorrow, David, we're going to be at the Knicks game together. How awesome is that, man?
Right, and it's been so long since we've done a game together that, hey, man, we will enjoy this. We will savor this. Because I don't know how many good home games there really are left, so I'm excited to do this one and see you again.
Yeah, that's going to be a treat because the Knicks are good. It should be a competitive contest. Let's get back to the Pelicans, and then we'll talk about the Knicks a little bit later. They've won three straight. They got destroyed by the Nets. They lost to the Hawks. They managed to beat the Rockets. It's just kind of been up and down and all over the place, Ali. Obviously, there have been some injuries sprinkled in. But I want to talk first and foremost about the trade. J.J. Redick, the much maligned J.J. Redick on his podcast, who not so famously said he shared some chagrin for David Griffin in the way that the trade was handled. But you can't argue with the results. James Johnson has been solid. They've gotten a good look at a long wing defender in Wesley Wundu, who's not shooting very well. And I'll go through those statistics in a little bit. 40% from the field, not terrible. From three-point range, 16.7%. Not optimal. But James Johnson has been solid. He's been exactly what the Pelicans need, exactly at the position that they need. Ali, do you want to briefly touch upon James Johnson's effect with the Pelicans and where you think he stands long-term?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been really active on social media, and there's been some articles written by some local guys really touching on James Johnson's contributions and his all-around talent. And for David and I, Charlie, a few of us who were at the Bird Rides, the first thing we saw after this trade was the fact that New Orleans got a professional football player. That's something Grubb has been, you know, lamenting there's been a lack of in New Orleans, at least, let's say, during Griffin's time, right, around these kids. Of course, I'm not ignoring Jrue Holiday, but I'm talking about other role players. There really just hasn't been those type of guys. And of course, Pelicans' biggest hole has always been right there on the wing, being able to do multiple things, but especially defend, right? Just do all the little things that win you games. And so James Johnson's just been a breath of fresh air. And he's actually even been better than I thought, because he hasn't really had a serious, consistent role for at least a couple of years.
Grubb, you still with me?
Last time I remember watching him play, right, like 25 minutes a game was in Miami. So I didn't expect to have or see him still show the capabilities that he was, especially in the first couple of games, right? Right after the trade, when the Pelicans were without Zion and Brandon, what he was able to do on the court really impressed me, right? Not just the points, but it's just the way he got the points, the playmaking, the second, third, fourth efforts, right? He really didn't show any weaknesses. I mean, yeah, he's not the best shooter, but overall, man, to get him in a trade for J.J. Redick and Nikola Melli has just been incredible. And I think Wesley Iwundu, he's got potential. You know, aside of the shooting, right, in the offense, he's really, yeah, he's lacking in that department. I love just the effort the kid plays with. Defensively, he almost comes up with steals. He's always hustling. And it's kind of noticeable on a team where certain other people don't hustle all the time. So, yeah, big fan of the trade. Glad they didn't. I really hope that there's a way David Griffin factors in James Johnson in the future plans, because I think he's deserving of a re-signing here in New Orleans, because he fits perfectly with what they do and who he would be surrounded by.
Ali, I think we lost you for a moment there. We lost Grubb before we got started, so I guess I'm next in line to lose internet for a moment. I have to stop you for a second, Ali, because I think you were referring to James Johnson. I'm not sure if you shifted gears to Wesley Wundu, but I heard you say the kid towards the end there, and James Johnson is 34 years old. Were you referring to James Johnson? Because I think you're dating yourself, Ali.
No, I didn't say that.
And we lost him again, so he can't defend himself.
I definitely called James Johnson a kid. Nope.
Perfect.
He's MMA JJ to all of us.
All right. Obviously, he's been a solid addition, and I want to touch on that too, Grubb. But I also want to talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers victory. It was kind of a disappointing showing, and then Najee Marshall hit the floor. I want to say he had like 15 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. I'm doing that off of memory because I don't have it in front of me. Basically, he was super solid, and he's had some spurts. I guess he's rocking that underwear like James Johnson, if it's up to me. But David, go ahead and touch upon the addition of James Johnson, Najee Marshall, when the Pelicans not only needed length on the wing, but they also just needed bodies with the injuries to Zion, to Brandon Ingram, to Josh Hart, among others, Lonzo Ball.
But, you know, the main thing that we're talking about with Najee Marshall, the thing that we're talking about with James Johnson, and what we're talking about even with Jackson Hayes right now, you could throw him in the same thing. It's just guys who are giving consistent effort right now. And Najee Marshall, you know, my thing is everybody who saw him, this is the salve, the heroin for the Kenrich Williams, the methadone for the Kenrich Williams people who wanted to see a guy who would throw his body on the ground and hustle. And you know, and the thing that Kenrich didn't do was attack the basket. And we've seen Najee do that. to try to score in transition and to take people off the dribble when they don't respect his shot, and that he's been able to hit a couple of jumpers when he's needed to. So yeah, I really like the effort, and I think that's the big thing. And like I said, you know, and like Ollie emphasized, professional basketball players, people who understand their roles, who are willing to take them on and then not go beyond that, to stretch the parameters of that role, but not try to break it and be someone else. And I think that's what they have gotten out of these guys that previously had just not played.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned Jackson Hayes, and I don't want to leapfrog forward too fast, but we do have to talk about the stark contrast, Ollie, between Jackson Hayes before being benched in favor of Billy Hernan Gomez and after. I pulled it up on a tweet, or I did this on the bird calls a little bit earlier. Basically, he and Kyra Lewis, ever since that point, March 3rd, have been the highest rated Pelicans. I want to say he's rated, you know, I can't remember it, but Jackson Hayes, Kyra, and Zion all together have a net rating of 26 in 114 minutes. And whatever it was, Kyra and Jackson Hayes are somewhere around 115 each, and they're somewhere around 22 net rating. That's incredible. That's staggering. And it's such a stark contrast because Jackson Hayes, the last time we did this podcast, Ollie, I want to say it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, Jackson Hayes ranked in the second percentile among all NBA players, all of them, in efficiency differential with the Pelicans. Now he's up to 40. I mean, he's almost middle of the pack after being in the second percentile. That is a tremendous leap to have in just, what is it, three and a half weeks, Ollie? Talk about how Jackson Hayes is putting it together.
Yeah.
Ollie, you gotta reset your Wi-Fi or something.
Yeah. Longer than that. I think you're giving him. Am I breaking up again?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
This is awful. What the heck? Maybe I'll try a different part of the house. Go ahead. I'll give this to David.
I'm not cutting this out. Let's just roll. Go for it, Grub.
Well, the thing with Jackson, I think that what he saw was Billy Hernan Gomez didn't do anything fantastic, but he made the Pelicans better when he was on the floor because he didn't make mistakes. And I think that was the first thing that they were trying to ask of Jackson is don't make the basic mistakes. Don't get lost. Don't, hedge on the pick and roll. Don't assume that your man is going to do something. And I think that he's gotten out of those habits and he's played with a little bit more effort. And that effort has turned into confidence because when you show the effort, you get rewarded by your teammates. So in transition, they are going to look for him and they know that he can finish if they throw the ball to him, but he has to do the work of running. And now he's doing that. And, you're seeing him even have to adapt to that four position. And he's not the greatest ball handler in the world. And he's not going to confuse anyone for a stretch four at this point. But he's been willing to take the shot. He's been willing to be a threat. And I think those are huge changes in his mindset rather than I'm going to dunk everything that's near me, which just didn't make sense too many times, to saying I'm going to make the best play in this situation. And I think that's a sign of maturity.
Yeah, for sure. I just want to touch upon something because I wrote about this year last year at length about how efficient Jackson Hayes was on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, he's taken most of his shots at or near the rim, around 75% or 70% field goal percentage last season. I think it was somewhere around 66, actually. And that's where he excelled, rebounding the ball offensively in transition. He was among one of the best. Defensively is where he struggled this year. At least recently, it's the opposite. And I'm just reading off these numbers to support my argument. But on the offensive side, he ranks in the 9th percentile. The team is 9 points worse per 100 possessions. But on the defensive side, the team is 6.2 points better. And he ranks in the 91st percentile. Obviously, this is only across 583 minutes. Obviously, he's doing a lot of this in garbage time. Obviously, it's a lot of experimental basketball. So it's not to be taken as gospel, but it's just an indicator. That's all it is, an indicator. Ollie, do you want to add on to any of that?
Yeah, I don't know what you guys touched on, but first of all, I hope I sound better.
Because you do.
Okay, good. I think it's helped for Jackson that he's not exclusively just stuck at the five. I think actually playing the four lends to more of his strengths on both ends of the court, right? He's athletic, so he can cover players on the perimeter. And on the offensive side, since he doesn't have any kind of post-up game, he doesn't even have a single post move, getting him away from the basket, actually, I feel like, is a better thing, right? So you get him on moves, cuts, or, he can even make a pass, a dribble, which surprised me is a couple games ago, I think he had a couple drives in a game to where he literally went from the perimeter and got to the hoop. And either, scored or got to the free throw line.
So if he can develop that, add that to his game, and keep working on that shot from the outside, I don't know. It's not the prettiest thing, but hey, the results have been there, right? And I'm not just talking about the heave from the other day, but I don't know. There's a player there. And that's something we couldn't say, like you said, before his benching, where, you know, smartly, Stan Van Gundy went to Billy Hernan Gomez for the productivity. But something clicked for Jackson, right, during that time on the bench. And it's been wonderful to see, because it's just a night and day difference now in player. Before, you know, we talked about it, and we weren't wrong for saying it. He just didn't look like he cared. He showed no improvement from the first year to, you know, the first 2 months or whatever it was. At the start of this year, right, the fundamentals hadn't improved on either side, but especially defensively, just the way his coverages and simple pick and rolls and you name it, weak side help wasn't there, to now he's actually doing all this stuff. So, yeah, it's just been great. And I'll tell you what, David Griffin and this Pelicans front office needed for some of these picks and some of these young guys to start panning out besides Zion. And it seems like all of them are, right? So we shouldn't just laud Jackson, because Nikhil was really showing us something over the last month. Kyra is really becoming a little bit more consistent on both ends of the floor. We can almost count on him to give you something every night. So, yeah, it's all around been, I think, a great thing for the Pelicans' development, for this team overall over these last, I want to say, about 6 weeks or so.
No, we definitely have been critical of David Griffin. We need to give him praise where praise is due, specifically as it pertains to the James Johnson deal. They're getting something out of Najee Marshall, which they desperately needed. Where you want to rank him and his ceiling is certainly up to you. We've definitely seen some flashes, but we've also seen the flashes of the Wesley Wundu, the Ken Rich Williams that David Grubb just prefaced, so we don't need to go back into that. David, just to get to some quick listener questions, just because we're touching on Jackson Hayes right now, Pels Argentina, M. Tooman, our friend, and Joshua, basically, they're all asking what you think Jackson Hayes' ceiling is now and where you see his long-term fit. Do you see him potentially starting at center as soon as next year? Do you see him shifting more to a full-time power forward center position and just, you know, pairing alongside Zion whenever Steven Adams sits? What do you see as his evolution at this point as a player?
If you're asking me today, and again, it's so hard to project on someone who's not 20 yet, but if you're asking me today, I think that you're seeing that Jackson Hayes is not going to be a five unless he's playing a stretch five type role. I think what you're going to do with Jackson Hayes at this point is you say, maybe I can try to turn him into an Anthony Davis light, where I can get this guy, you know, and people are going to say, you're talking about
David.
Anthony. No, what I'm saying, you know what I'm saying?
I've got a comp to throw out there to you since you're answering this question. What about Jonathan Isaac?
Yeah, something like that. A long guy who can hit some shots for you, will run the floor, and can face up defend. And I think facing up defending will be easier for Jackson than post defending will ever be. That's just not going to be his forte. He's not built like that. Like, physically, as he gets more mature, his body is still not going to have I don't see the lower body kind of trunk and strength, that core strength that's going to make him a great post defender to keep a Joel Embiid off the block. But if he's a face-up four and can defend a guy like a Michael Porter Jr. at 6'10", and can run the floor and switch off of long threes and fours, mm-hmm. your Tobias Harris's of the world, if that's what you're getting out of Jackson, and he's knocking down 1-3 a game, and he can hit that 15-footer to 20-foot shot on occasion, coming off of a pick and pop, and then you can still get him the lobs in transition. Mm-hmm.
All right, and it's just me and Ollie.
Yeah, just to pick up on David, because I love where he was going with this. And the reason I mentioned Jonathan Isaac is for the reasons he mentioned, but here's another one. Just James Johnson right here on the team, right? He's a guy who's, you know, came in the league as a small four, but his best position by far is the four. And, you know, he can guard 3 through 5. He can do a lot of these things. And Jackson, I feel like, has given us a glimpse of that playmaking, right? He's made some good passes on back cuts. I know yesterday he had a bad turnover on one of them, right? Doesn't make the right read every time, but you see the glimpse of that talent. So if he can develop a little bit better handle, a more reliable jumper, and you know, just basically rough out these edges, right? Smooth them out in his game, then yeah, I'm with David 100%. I see him as more of a four in this league, who can, of course, play some five, but his best position is going to be at the four, I think. And I think that's great for a team that wants to spread the floor, to be able to be so versatile defensively.
What
I think Jackson's working out better than I thought, right? He's not going to be a Tyson Chandler. I think that's who we all hoped for his ceiling maybe to be, right? Not counting any kind of offensive improvement. But, yeah, I'm with Grubb 100%. I think that is, would be an excellent ceiling for him to attain. So it's no loss to me if he doesn't, you know, play 25, 30 minutes a game at center.
Perfect, Grubb. Ollie just finished your thought pretty well. I'll just sum it up for you. Basically, I've watched a lot of Jonathan Isaac, and Isaac has a superior handle, a jump shot. He can pick and pop a little bit smoother than Jackson Hayes can. But Jackson is superior athletically, and I think every single facet. He's longer. He's faster. He can get higher. His second bounce, his fast twitch fibers are just faster, stronger than Jonathan Isaac. So in terms of what he can do physically, he surpasses Jonathan Isaac. Where Jonathan Isaac can't be touched by most players in the league is his defensive intellect, his instinct, his ability to rise with his opponent, to just kind of sense or study what his opponent's going to do. He just has one of the best basketball minds that I've been around on that end. Not to say I've been around as many people as David Grubb has, but just he has an innate ability to sense what his opponent is going to do, and he can react to it very, very quickly. But if Jackson Hayes can develop that skill, who knows? That's the thing. We don't know what Jackson Hayes is going to be right now, but the most important thing is whatever is happening between his ears is working. That's where we've always been critical of him. Between his ears, it wasn't working, and now it appears that it is. I think it's time. We're going to get to Zion next, but David, I want to talk about Brandon Ingram. Obviously, he's the guy when the Pelicans struggle is getting the most of, I guess, Twitter's ire at this point. Offensively, he's doing his part. In the past 15 games, 24 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds on 47% from the field, 39.3% from three, 86.3% from the free throw line. What has his, combination pairing with Zion, how do you think it's evolving with Zion now shifting towards more on-ball responsibility?
I think offensively it's fine. I don't have any problem with them as a pair offensively. I think people have made too much into it. And it's, you know, look, the one thing you wanted to see for Brandon offensively was consistency. And so you've gotten basically the same numbers out of him this year that you got last year. And I don't say that as a negative because Zion's role has expanded this year. That is something that was just a natural byproduct. The thing for me is always going to be, how do they mesh defensively? And I think we've seen more improvement this year from Zion defensively than we have from Brandon. If we've seen any improvement from Brandon defensively, and I can't with a certainty say that we have. So I think that's going to be the bigger question for this duo going forward, is does Brandon Ingram ever live up to the defensive potential that everybody saw in him when he was drafted? But offensively, you can pair most people. It's like the Shaq, or, you know, whatever, when you talk about Zion, you can pair most people with him. They're going to be okay. It's going to be hard to find someone who doesn't play well with Zion.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, we'll continue on that line of thinking. Obviously, the national media storyline is that Brandon Ingram's taking too many of the shots, the minutes at the end of games. In those critical moments, Ollie, how do you think the Pelicans offense is unfolding or enacting their game plan?
They're improving. Before, at the start of the year, they were clunky. They had no clue on how to finish a game, who to run it through, what to do. It was literally just isolation ball. A lot of stuff that we saw last season, but they had Drew Holiday bailing them out often. This year, of course, there's no Drew, and, you know, a lot of cold water was thrown in their faces. But I think they're coming out. And while you were just talking to David, I looked up the fourth quarter numbers since Point Zion happened. And of course, Zion, yeah, he's amazing. He's great. But I'm talking about this fourth quarter numbers where Brandon Ingram was terrible. And I remember talking with David about this, you know, throughout this season. Well, since, you know, Point Zion happened, I'm looking at January 26 on. Brandon Ingram, 45.5 field goal percentage, 39.1 from three, right? These are stats just in the fourth quarter where he didn't have this. It was around 30%, I want to say 33, maybe field goal percentage earlier in the year. Well under 30% from three, so he's even improving. So it just shows me that these guys are figuring out. And, yeah, I mean, everybody made today, I saw some kind of tweet where, what is it, Eric Bledsoe's pointing to throw the ball to Zion. Brandon's got it on the wing. Steven Adams was pointing, even some people on the fans, or was it coaches on the bench? I'm not sure. But they're making too much out of Brandon just not knowing what to do, which I disagree with. I think it's smart of the Pelicans to try to give Brandon as long of a leash as possible to develop, to basically be another go-to guy. It can't just be Zion. It would be the best of both worlds if both of these guys could be counted on to get you a bucket. And we saw that last night, right, didn't we? I mean, over the fourth quarter, these guys combined missed one shot. I remember looking at stats. I think they combined for like 19 or 20 points. And Brandon, by far and away, really did seal the deal for New Orleans yesterday. So I wouldn't mind for this experiment going on rather than just get the ball to Zion every time, exclusively let the offense run through him. Now, I don't mind Brandon getting some of that. I think that's great because that gives the opposing defenses a lot more to think about.
But stop giving Brandon the ball at the top of the key. That doesn't
work. Right. Don't have him bring it up, but just, yeah, I don't mind him playmaking some, though, is what I'm getting at.
No,
right?
It's got, but yeah, the big thing is if you make him the, when they start making him point Brandon, yes. Point Brandon never works.
No, he goes point left Brandon to right too much. Never yeah. Works.
And that's, you know, when you see, when Antonio Daniels is bemoaning the fact of, you know, lack of ball movement,
yeah.
It's usually the second unit or it's when Brandon is playing point. And right. That's the biggest thing is like, if he's passing off of the score, and that's something we've said all year, when he's passing off of the attack, he's so much better than somebody who's trying to direct people. That's not his forte.
Okay, if you haven't done it already, you have to check out Locker Room. Locker Room is a free, audio-only social media platform for sports fans. Talk with other sports fans, insiders, athletes, and executives in real time. Join in on conversations with me and Chris Connor and have a chance to be featured on our podcast. All you need to do is download the Locker Room app free in the iOS App Store, create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the group. Follow me at Preston Ellis or at Impatient Bull to be notified when my room goes live. We'll be going live on Locker Room? Who knows? Chris will be the better person to ask. It's that time of year again, and all eyes are now on pro basketball and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline.ag has all the betting action. In the NBA, the conference races are heating up as teams prepare to make their run for the playoffs. And if baseball's your first love, BetOnline has you covered. If you love hockey, golf, MMA, and championship boxing, BetOnline has it all. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to place and check in on all your favorite sports bets all the time. Head to the website or use your mobile device and bring home the game with BetOnline. All right, I'm going to leapfrog forward. I really want to get into Kyra Lewis. I promised you guys these statistics. And I looked them up a little bit earlier just in terms of what Kyra's been doing in addition to what Jackson Hayes has been doing. Okay, here it is. Wow, I just lost it. Now it's back. All right, so in the last 20 games, the team leaders in net rating are, of course, Jackson Hayes and Kyra Lewis. Kyra Lewis at 9.2 in net rating. And the other number... in the last 20 games, when they play together, Zion and Jackson Hayes, their net rating is 22.9. When Zion and Kyra are together, it's 21.7. Staggering numbers. His numbers just in terms of in per 36, I want to say 14.4 points. I keep losing it. I don't know. I don't remember how to use Twitter anymore. I've been off of it for the past week or so. But anyway, I'll pull it back up momentarily. Here's what I'm getting to, David. Kyra has been impressive. He's gelled well with these guys. He's pairing well with Zion. That's the ultimate goal. That's what we need to find out. That's the purpose of this season, if nothing else. They're not necessarily in contention. They're not bottoming them out. So you need to find who complements Zion, who's going to bring the best out of Zion. And right now it feels like Kyra is fitting into that pretty admirably. But in terms of what these guys are able to do on the floor, hold on, give me one more second. There it is. My internet's working. Okay. So Kyra's been steady on the floor, but we have to talk about Eric Bledsoe. So Kyra's still coming off the bench, and maybe that's where you want him. But Eric Bledsoe continues to hurt this team in terms of the efficiency differential, something we touched upon with Jackson Hayes earlier. He's in the 19th percentile league-wide. So per 100 possessions, the team is 7.3 points worse when Eric Bledsoe is on the floor. David, how do the Pelicans handle this? Do you want Kyra in the starting lineup? Do you want Eric Bledsoe just to figure it out? How do they navigate their way through this muddy water?
I mean, the most important thing we always say is it's not who starts, who finishes. So if you just want to give the veteran his deference and start him the rest of the way, okay, whatever. You know, the Pelicans don't really have bad first quarters too often. So, okay, whatever. But it's the amount of minutes. The fact that he's playing 30-plus minutes each night has become a problem. And that doesn't necessarily mean that Kyra's ready to play, 30 minutes a night. But again, at this point, if you're saying to me, if Stan Van Gundy is telling you on a night-to-night basis, we have to have ball pressure, Bledsoe's not giving you that. We have to have people touching the paint. We're not, and Bledsoe's not giving you that. And the defensive impact has not been there with Eric Bledsoe this year. Then what is going to make you think that over these last 18 games and suddenly it's going to improve? So whether you get to the 10th spot, the 9th spot, or you don't make the play-in at all, give me these minutes to Kyra at some of them at least. Get his minutes to be consistent and let him let you find out whether he has the ability to play in crunch time minutes. Because if he's not going to embrace that now, and you hate to compare anybody to greats in their first year, but we know that players who are programmed to be great are going to take big shots in big moments, and they're going to want those moments, even if they miss. And I want to see if Kyra's built like that.
Just to give you some numbers, Ollie, before we get to your side of this, let me switch this to per 36, because I always think that sounds a little bit better since he's only playing about 20 minutes per game in the past 15 games. So per 36, he's right around 16 points per game, shooting 45% from the field, 37% from three, slightly above league average. He's also given out 5.5 assists and 3.2 rebounds, and he's getting 2 steals. But most importantly, his plus minus is 7.3, and the team is 4.5 points better than their opponent per 100 possessions. Talk about Kyra's improvement. What do you think his ceiling is? How do you think he fits with this squad so far, Ollie?
He's improving all over the court. I'm going to take a couple plays from yesterday's game, for example. He made a bad pass, a lob pass. I can't remember if it was to Jackson or Zion, but easily intercepted by the Kings. And this is when the momentum is shifted to Sacramento in the second half. What does he do on immediate next possession, defensive possession for the Pelicans? He comes up with a steal with his blazing speed and gets that breakaway dunk. You saw almost everything in that play of what he's going to be capable of defensively off the ball, right? And especially when the desire is there, right? He was upset that he made one of the few turnovers that he's had all season. And it came at a critical moment in the game, but boy, did he make up for it. You love seeing that. I wish we would have seen some more of that examples out of Eric Bledsoe, who was supposed to be a renowned defender. So either way, Kyra's showing you that now, that kind of improvement. More importantly, I think he's now showing not only a desire, but an ability to stay in front of his man. First handful of games or so, maybe what, David? I don't know, 10, 12, 15 games. Whoever he was guarding, whether they were just bigger in stature or just faster or really almost anybody, they were getting around him half of the games, you know, half the time when he was defending those assignments. Now I see him staying in front of guys, but more importantly, now he's actually putting his body on the line, and he took a very important charge in last night's game. And so, and he's been trying to do that more and more over these last couple of weeks or so. I noticed where he's given up his body. So that is all you really can do in today's, you know, defensively. The way the rules are set up, the way how good these players are, it is so hard to slow down opposing players when, you know, they're kind of all-star talent scorers. So the only way you can do is just disrupt them enough, get a hand in their face, stay in front of them. And I'm seeing more of that out of Kyra. So, yeah, combined with all those abilities that David's already touched on, right, the athleticism and everything, it seems to be there, the kind of desire to when he's open, he's taking those shots. I want him to have those opportunities going forward because I think there is a much better player than I think I even gave him credit for underneath there. And the fact that he's shown it in his rookie year, no practices, no summer league, and the improvement he's made from the first game he's played to, you know, last night's game, it's incredible to me. He just turned 20, right? Or is he going to turn 20 this week? Something like that. Anyways, he's still such a baby. And for him to play meaningful minutes and be a positive contributor, wow. I think he's going to be solid gold.
This might not mean anything to you because he certainly doesn't take that many free throws, but he actually has not missed a free throw since February 17th. Nearly 2 months. Obviously, he's not getting to the stripe a lot, but he has not missed a free throw in 2 months. That's pretty staggering. But hopefully he'll get to the free throw line more often so he can miss a couple for us. I think this might be an Ollie question. This is from Clint White, longtime listener. Thanks for your question, Clint. What would a contract for James Johnson and Najee Marshall look like for you? And do you consider them wins for the Pels moving forward? I think we already addressed that. We do. James Johnson, obviously the Pelicans will have the mid-level and biannual exceptions available to them if they have the requisite space. Right now, they're right against the luxury tax line. So if they wanted to use the mid-level, let's say this year, they wouldn't be able to. They could use the tax payer exception, but I don't know as much about that as David Fisher does. But going forward, they do have James Johnson's bird rights, and as long as they're under that luxury tax, you'd think they'd try to lock him up. Ali, what does a contract for James Johnson and Najee Marshall look like to you right now?
Well, with James Johnson, right, he's coming off a pretty good contract where he's making, what, roughly 15 or so million. I think you can get him since he's 33 and he's on the tail end of his career and hasn't been playing much, as we've already mentioned, last few years or so. I think you could get him to a contract. I know Fish threw it out in their chat, 2 years, 10 million. I think that's pretty close, right? I'm thinking maybe you can entice him, do 3 years at 15, or maybe give him a little bit more for 2 years if you don't want to take that chance, handicap, you know, salary cap going forward by giving 3 years to a guy that's, you know, 33 now. But yeah, somewhere in that ballpark, I think that's doable. I think James Johnson would take it because he looks like a guy to me that just wants to play ball. When in his first couple of games, it was impossible to miss how excited he was on the court, how he was communicating with his new teammates, how he was basically directing them, you know, out there on the floor. And he didn't really even have an understanding of what the Pelicans are doing. But he just exuded this type of confidence, but ability, but also genuine, you know, happiness and joy to me that I think that if he could be in kind of kept in this similar role, he would happily take it. So you throw $5-6 million at a guy who's made, you know, plenty over the course of his career, I'm sure he would say, then that would be enough. Give this man 20, 22 minutes a game. And like I said, the $5-6 million a year, whatever, 2-3 years, he would gladly take it and run. As for Najee Marshall, everybody was talking about maybe give him a Lou Dort type of, you know, extension, right? Signing for 4 years. What was it? 4 years, $5.4 million, something like that, Lou Dort got. I'm not ready to commit to anything yet, even though he's looked great, you know, this week or whatever. There's still 18 games left. I don't think there's any reason to jump the gun when you still got, you know, the rest of this year. If it makes sense for the Pelicans to sign him, say, in a couple weeks' time, I think Andrew Lopez had a tweet saying the Pelicans really can't make a move right now because if they did, that means X player is going to have to get more money paid to him now, which is going to go on the books and count against the Pelicans because it's going to exceed the tax line. So if you wait a couple weeks, that number or figure will be lower. And therefore, you'll have that flexibility of staying underneath, of course, the luxury tax. The Pelicans don't want to go over it, right? There's no reason to pay a tax in this type of season where they're, what, five games under 500, clearly not headed for any kind of playoff, legitimate long-run contender status. So, yeah, with Najee, I like what I've seen this week. He gives you that effort defensively, but we saw that out of Kenrich, right, in his first year. I want to see if he's got a little bit more offense. The playmaking looks promising. He's had a couple of good drives, right? So he's had more variety, as Dave has already mentioned. But, you know, there's no rush to this, I don't think. So let's at least give it 2-4 weeks more before talking about maybe signing him this year to some kind of extension before the season's over.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Grub, I want to shift gears because we're at about the 45-minute mark, but I really like these two questions from Bring Back the Real and This is Coach Jerry. And I want to do my own riff on it. They're asking about replacing Josh Hart's effect and Lonzo Ball's effect. What has the effect of Najee Marshall, Wesley Iwundu, James Johnson, and Kyra Lewis and Nikhil, we haven't talked about Nikhil, but he's out with an injury right now. I promise we will when he's back in the lineup. We've seen a lot of positive performances from that. Has that changed your mind in any respect as to how much you want to pay Josh Hart and Lonzo Ball this summer?
Not Lonzo. I mean, I think, you know, I'm never an apologist for anybody, so I'm not really a stan or anything for that. But if my position on Lonzo changes because of what I've seen out of these guys, then again, why did I keep him at the trade deadline? You know what I'm saying? Like, if this is how the winds are blowing on my Lonzo feelings. Now, Josh Hart is a much different situation, as are most of the reserves. If you're a veteran reserve, you're not on your rookie deal, then, and even some of the guys on their rookie deals, you still have to look at them and say, this summer, what are my options? So I'm like Ollie, I'm not rushing to do anything with anybody because I have this major decision to make in negotiating with Lonzo. I have to deal with what I'm going to do with Josh Hart, and I have to figure out how many of these guys are legitimate core pieces and how many do I need to get rid of? And those conversations could involve a number of people who are under contract. So I'm in no rush if I'm the Pelicans, because even if you get somehow miraculously get to 500 or get into the playoffs, you're still not a good basketball team until you can defend. And do you think running it back with this exact same group of guys is going to all of a sudden make this a good defensive team? I don't think so. So that means that some of these people have to go.
All right. I think.
I want to jump in real quick on this regarding Lonzo. Here's a thought that nobody's really talked about. And this is something we talked about, I think, over the summer when we were talking about a potential extension for Lonzo, now paying him instead of waiting until this upcoming offseason. Lonzo Ball has always been injury prone. It's something we've always talked about, especially Grubb and I. Well, guess what? He has missed 10 of the last 13 games. So suddenly I think the way that we had all wanted him to finish the season may not be in the cards, right? Where you wanted to see him finish strongly to where, you know, he's been great ever since. He missed those first couple of games in January, whatever it was, came back. And from January up until his hips started bothering him, that he played really well. Well, guess what? That's been derailed, I feel like. And so him being injured, I really feel like that's going to play a part, or should play a part, in his contract negotiations. So any kind of threat of him possibly getting 20 to 22, 23 million average per season over the next 4 years, I think suddenly that figure is probably going to be closer now to 18, maybe 19 million. Just the simply pushback, because he's once again proving he can't get through a season healthy. And that matters in today's NBA.
The pushback for players, though, is going to be this schedule was ridiculous. That's what the thing is going to be. It's like, when did we get a chance to recover? And you're going to say we had more soft tissue injuries this year. You had more ACL injuries. You had more of these. And you can never prove causation and correlation when it comes to these things. Mm-hmm. But if I'm an agent, and when you hear Mark Cuban say what he said, I'm using Mark Cuban's words against it. That's an owner saying that this schedule is crazy. And then I'm going to put the number of games that we played in a number of days, where you're talking about basically one game every other day, you know, and the amount of back-to-backs and the road trips that were just insane. That's what I would counter as an agent if you try to throw injuries at me and say, when was I going to have a chance to truly recover if I'm coming back and I'm playing back-to-back, one night off, back-to-back, one night off, 8 games in 10 days, you know, that's not, it's just not fair. And fair is not a part of business, but yeah, I'm just saying that's how the fight will go both ways.
Yeah, I totally see that, David. I would say, just to counter you, I mean, Bled's played 53 games, Lonzo's played 41, B.I. 49, Zion 49. And for Zion to play that much more than Lonzo, I mean, I think this training staff has done a remarkable job in New Orleans. And Lonzo's struggling through what now, his third injury of the season. It's just, he's got a history of it. That's all I'm pointing out.
Oh, no. Like, absolutely, yeah. They're going to use that. And it's just that, how much do you want to poke that to devalue that? You know, yeah. So, I mean, it's something that maybe you incentivize. That's where you start saying is, okay, well, there's a kicker for games played, minutes played, et cetera, things like that. And that's where agents would try to make that deal. I just don't think, I don't think it's the one of the things, and I think that's what we'll both agree, Ollie, is that it's not something that's going to change their mind on whether or not they want to keep him or not.
Oh, God, no way.
Yeah.
I enjoy the debate, but I think that Lonzo Ball will definitively be back. It is so rare that a restricted free agent walks unless the parent team wants them to walk. And I hope parent is the right term. The team with the vested interest in the player, unless they want them to walk, they have the ability to match. I don't think anybody's going to offer him a max level salary. We've gone over in the past the type of free agents that are going to be available. And how many teams have cap room? Not a lot. The teams that do, like the New York Knicks, guess what? They've only got four players under contract next season, and they're going to have a lot of interest in this free agent pool themselves, as well as probably not a top 10 pick anymore. Actually, they're doing pretty well in that regard. But before we wrap up, I do have a couple of questions, but we can't get out of here. I do this all the time. I never talk about the guy who's shining the brightest, whether it be Anthony Davis, Brandon Ingram, because I just don't feel like we need to. But in Zion's case, we kind of do. I'll start this with Grum. Over the past 16 games, 524 minutes, I'm doing everything since the All-Star break. He's averaging 33 points per game, 63% from the field, 50% from three-point range, around 70% from the free throw line. 33 points, 8 rebounds, and nearly 5 assists to go along with 1 steal and 0.7 blocks. Obviously, we toy around with this in the Bird Rights chat group, and the Pelicans aren't winning nearly enough games for him to be considered an MVP-type candidate. But he's still, at 75 games into his career, David? Are we seeing the genesis of a definitive top five player in the next 3 years?
Offensively, he's there. You know, he's one of the top five offensive weapons in the NBA right now. But it's all going to come down to, for Zion, is defense. That's what it's going to come down to. Is he a consistent presence on defense? And until he's that, that's going to be the one thing that keeps him from going from superstar, which is where he's probably sitting right now, to being an icon, to being the legitimate face of the league. You know, there's the Vince Carter type faces of the league that people tune in to watch. And then there's the LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, those types of leaders that people tune in to see win. And I think, you know, the thing is for LeBron, for Zion in this case, is going to be, does he get to the point where it's not just impacting on that one end? Is he a difference maker defensively? And when he gets there, you're talking about not just a Hall of Fame potential, but you're talking about, you know, a guy who could finish in the top 10 to 15 players of all time. He has that sort of skill set.
I want to touch on something that I saw. I can't remember which game it was, and I'm sure that Ollie will remember better than me. But some of the stuff we talk about with Zion, he can finish with either hand at the rim. He can get around any defender regardless of size. He can operate in the pick and roll. Obviously, he has that patented spin move. He showed us a nice fadeaway, a mid-range game. I want to say it was like 11 or 12 feet. It wasn't deep, but he's just showing us a different arsenal. But what really impressed me was the end of one of the games that was pretty tight, one of the last two or three games, Ollie. Hopefully, you can pinpoint it, where he was trapped by three defenders. He had to pass the half-court line. The clock was ticking down. As a ball handler, he escapes the trap, weaves his way between three defenders who obviously are in a position where they need to take the ball or foul, and he manages to escape them. And that's what really, jumped out to me from the screen, was now he's starting to operate as a ball handler in a way that a guy of his size and his penchant for finishing never has before, Ollie.
No, you're right. I wish I could remember the exact instance you're talking about, because that's not ringing a bell for me. But look, I've seen him.
It was the Cavs. It was the Cavs, because I remember like three possessions earlier. Okay. I got so mad because Chetty Osman took Eric Bledsoe off the dribble from the three-point line. And Joel Meyer said something to the effect of, oh, he's using his size at his advantage. And Antoni was like, yeah, but his advantage is kind of at the three-point line for Bledsoe. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, You just nailed it. Zion is making big plays, but more importantly, he's making the right reads, and he's thinking the game. So for him to evade not just one defender, but a couple of them, says a lot about how he's, you know, how he can think two, three steps ahead to me. And, you know, every game we watch, I feel like there's always something Zion does that's astounding. Last year, it was just his, you know, his athleticism, right? His speed and athleticism to get to the basket, to make, whether it's a dunk, a play, a second chance, put back, you name it. This year, he's doing a lot more than that. I feel like now he's showing us, on top of what you guys are talking about, he's got an in and out dribble. He can go to his right hand, and he goes to his right more often now. And now of late, right, he's been pulling out, I think I count three jumpers he's made now, short little mid-range jumpers. And a couple of them come at the end of games. So he's pulling out. If he can pull off that shot and rely on that, and that's going to be consistent, this course became famous right after, what was it, I think the Cleveland game, where he said Teresa Witherspoon's been on him about pulling it out of his bag because he claims he's got it in his bag, but she's asked for him, just one jumper a game, just give me one jumper. And now he's beginning to do that. I mean, it's just incredible to see the growth of this guy. He went from being a post-up guy in Alvin's system, and he had a really rough start this year. If you guys remember, right, what was it, the first few handful of games in December, he wasn't even averaging 20 points a game. Everybody was talking about a sophomore slump coming. He from that point to now, it's just been astounding to see, what, 28 points a game. You already listed the stats, Preston, but the way he's able just to carry an offense for an entire game now, make all the right reads, he's averaging only like 2.5 turnovers with the amount of touches. It's just insane. So there's no doubt. I'm going to second David's opinion. Next to LeBron and Luka, there aren't too many players that you can count on with the ball, I think, even right now, today. I mean, I think you put Giannis, Kawhi, and some others, but Zion's right there in that group for me as of today on making the right play. That's incredible for a 20-year-old.
Yeah, obviously you wouldn't compare him to James Harden, but just in the way that he can dominate the game offensively and the way that the defense has to key on him, I would think is very similar, although the way that the style that they play is obviously so very different. And obviously Zion gives you more of an impact on the defensive end, but we're just seeing the birth of his game, and it's just going to keep growing and growing. I want to thank Big Greasy and Jay Strokes. I did different iterations of their questions. Jay, you like their names?
That's Charles Pierre. It's just different. It's just different pairing those together. Like if they had been with anyone else. But paired together, it's just funny. I'm sorry, guys. It is.
No, I'm disappointed in our friend Waka Waka Wakanda. We never get his questions anymore. So if Waka Waka Wakanda, you're listening, I'm holding out hope for you, buddy, that you're going to come back to us. I don't know where you've gone. You've got your knapsack over your shoulder. You're on your distant voyage. But it's time to come home, Waka Waka Wakanda. Matthias had a great question about Chris Paul playing point guard for the Pelicans. Basically, any team that has Chris Paul is, of course, going to improve substantially. I think that's what we've seen with the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Phoenix Suns. I don't think we have to touch on that too much. The Thunder were actively trying to tank. I think you can make that definitive argument last year, and they still took the Rockets right to the precipice of a loss in the first round series in a game seven. And now we're seeing with the Suns a second seed. That's astounding given how strong the West is. We also had a question. Oh my goodness. Did we get everybody? I think we got everybody. So I guess that'll wrap it up. I guess we'll finish with this one, Ollie. Obviously, the Pelicans sit somewhere around, I'm going to get 24 and 29. Let's see exactly how far they are out of the play-in.
One game behind the Warriors, two behind the Spurs.
Okay, thank you. You've got that right off memory. Good job by you.
The Spurs are not the problem. And look, they can. I'll say this, Preston, to cut it, to just jump to the chase, I'll say. Golden State is going to bail. Okay, the Pelicans are likely going to get that 10 spot because Golden State is going to bail because they're not healthy now. And Draymond don't want to play, and James Wiseman's hurt, and Klay's not going to play. And Steph does not going to – I think Golden State bails, and the Pelicans, if as long as they don't shoot themselves in the foot tremendously, I think they can they'll get the 10 almost by default. You'd like to see them win their way in, but I think Golden State falls completely off at the last 2 weeks.
Well, they've won two in a row, right? And I think now, Steph, as long as he's on the court, he's a problem. He can win you games. And the Pelicans got to play three games against these guys. And we've seen what Damian Lillard, De'Aaron Fox, right? Zach LaVine. I'm worried of what Steph's going to do if he at all has any kind of desire to win those games.
The Pelicans losing to them. I'm not talking about that. You know, I mean, the Pelicans can lose.
Well, I think it's going to come down to those three games is what I'm getting at. I think they're going to have to win two of the three.
I think it comes down to the five-game road trip.
Okay.
That five-game road trip, when you go out there and it's just horrid. Because, I mean, yeah, you've got to beat Golden State. But if you – that five-game road trip could be, depending on how those teams are at that point, that could be – I mean, that's just a rough trip. I think the Lakers game at the end of the year is meaningless Lakers. Yeah. They won't even play a single starter in that game more than 5 minutes. So I don't even think that one counts. But that road trip looms so heavily, and Golden State is part of that five-game road trip.
Yeah, the Grizzlies, the Mavericks, the Hornets, 76ers, they're all right there at the end too.
Yeah, and those are all teams that are going, you know, the 76ers have a guy, Ben Simmons, who wants to be Defensive Player of the Year. You got Joel Embiid, who wants to be MVP. You got the Mavericks, obviously, who want to do the best that they can at that stretch.
They want to get out of the seventh spot, man.
And
you heard what Mark Cuban said today, right?
Yeah, and they can catch the Lakers. They legitimately have a chance to catch the Lakers if the Lakers bottom out just while waiting for AD and LeBron to get back.
Mm-hmm.
So the Mavericks have a chance to jump to six, and the Lakers can fall to seven. That's possible. So, I mean, if that happens, and you're talking about the Lakers trying to falling into a play-in, then that becomes even weirder, because then they might want to play on that last game of the season. But it's just strange. It's really just between the Pelicans and Golden State.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I have not been impressed by the Spurs. That's why I don't think, you know, I know they've won two in a row too. But before that, man, they've been – sharp arrow downwards, because I remember when they were fifth or sixth or something like that in the standings. Not
but who
that
can
long
catch
ago.
Him? Who can? I mean, like, who's? It's. I think the Spurs still have the advantage because they're still what a game up on Golden State.
Yeah, but they have the toughest. If I remember right, I think they have the toughest schedule left. If not, it's one of the toughest.
Is it? I mean, the Pelicans' schedule isn't easy considering it's 11 on the road, 7 at home, and the 7 that are at home are very tough games.
Because the Knicks, I agree with you there. Lakers, yeah, it's not cupcake city for New Orleans. No.
It's considering that the Knicks at all, and whatever you think. I mean, if they split against the Knicks, that wouldn't be surprising.
That's what I think is going to happen. Honestly, these next three games, I think they're going to win two of the three. Just split with the Knicks, as you just said, beat the Wizards,
and then you and the Wizards. I mean, again, you look at the Wizards right now.
They're trying still. I know.
Very. Beal is playing good basketball. And perimeters where the Pelicans struggle. So if they get hot shooting the basketball, and they almost beat the Pelicans with only Beal the last time they played.
And the Pelicans grew up big in that game, remember, and they came back.
Ugh. So you're talking about we saw these two struggle wins, these last two wins against teams that didn't have, and Cleveland didn't have its two best players. And the Pelicans struggled against Cleveland and are really a fraction of an inch from Kevin Love knocking down that three to tie the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, there are still things that you look at with this team and say, this.
That's one way to get this podcast over with.
It's been one of those. So the Spurs have the second most difficult schedule remaining. The Pelicans have the 11th most difficult. And the Golden State Warriors have the 26th. So they have the fifth easiest. So it just whoever wants it, I guess, at this point. But there's a good chance the Spurs will their schedule will just be too tough. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. We are right at the hour. Ollie, any thoughts you'd like to sign off on?
I don't think so, because we got to almost every topic. But I do want to mention one thing. Stan Van Gundy being so honest after that Cavalier game. We were kind of talking about where can the improvements come from on Brandon Ingram and Zion. So for him to say, look, Dean Wade was a season high or career high. Same thing for Isaac Okoro. And there were a couple others that had standout performances. When you've got Zion and Brandon Ingram doing what they're doing offensively but not giving you anything defensively against those guys, that's a problem. So I'm glad he said it publicly, and I thought they played better last night. I particularly saw a lot more activity out of Zion defensively. B.I. still got a way to go, and I'm really shocked by that. But, hey, there's 18 more games, hopefully, right? The messages start sinking in. But, yeah, overall, you just want to see that continued improvement with this team. Hopefully the guys will stay healthy, right? That's the biggest thing. They can't afford to lose another guy. And going forward, I'm worried about Brandon Ingram being the only reliable jump shooter from the perimeter right now, because you've got no Lonzo, no Nikhil. I mean, those are the next two. If Kyra's shot's not going down, who are you looking at? Bledsoe's been, boy, he's just fallen off a cliff lately.
Lately?
Yeah, I know. That. All of Twitter asked me that yesterday. Yeah, I know.
Like, where did that cliff start? Like, it's just... Is this like the
making his threes earlier in the season? Remember, he was around 40%.
Yeah, that was leading the Pelicans. That might have been in February. I think that was early February the last time he was leading the Pelicans in threes.
Yeah, no, you're right. His shot, almost every other shot looks different, right? His form, some has higher arc, the way he finishes. I don't know what's going on with him, but every time he drives in the lane, my biggest problem is every time he drives in the lane, he doesn't look to score. It's like he doesn't feel like in his head he can. And that's such a problem.
He stops in the most awkward spots.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I don't know what's going on with him, but he's not right mentally.
All right, Greg, you want to sign off for us?
Death.
Yeah, I want to touch on that. I didn't write anything down because I wanted it to sound sincere. Obviously, hopefully, if you listen to this podcast, you know a bit about my character and you know that I would never intentionally say anything like that. Obviously, what I said was stupid, reading it back and having some friends reach out to me and go, hey, man, why did you tweet that? Obviously, I have sincere regret about that. That's not at all what I meant or what I was trying to convey. And I obviously feel really, really bad about it. And I hope that everybody is willing to give me a second chance. It's not at all the way I was intending to frame that
question. It's not that serious, Preston. It really is. You didn't mean it that way. And nobody
knew that. Half of Twitter, they're morons for thinking.
How many jokes have me or Ali made on Twitter about like calling him the fifth guy or play 4-on-5, you know, stuff like that. Look, it's a joke thing that we do. Sometimes we misfire. You didn't hit home on everybody, but it was still a joke, and you did not wish harm on that dude. That's not what you were doing.
Yeah,
you were just saying it's weird that the guy who's performing the least is the only one that hasn't gotten hurt this year. I get it. People just didn't get it. I got it.
Thanks, man. To give myself some comfort, I looked at my profile. I've knocked off 25,000 tweets, 25,000. And that one is probably by far and away my worst. And if that's the worst thing that you tweet out of 25,000, I guess that's not so bad. I don't know. Looking for a silver lining. Anyway, thanks everybody so much for coming with us. I know we haven't had a podcast in 3 weeks. We appreciate so much your support and everybody asking questions continuously and sticking with us. I know it's been an up and down season, but honestly, for me, I feel a lot better about it than I did at the start of the season based on what we've seen from Nikhail, what we've seen from Kyra, what we've seen from Jackson Hayes. James Johnson having his addition to the team has been much needed. Zion, of course, is playing like an MVP. Obviously, we're not winning enough games for him to even be considered, but it's been exciting. Obviously, there's a lot that goes along with that, and these guys touched upon that beautifully. But again, for Ali, follow him at Ohel Cassell and at DM Grub. I'll finish with this. David, how much longer do you think we have you before you're just too busy to do this anymore?
Guys, I'm not going anywhere with you guys. I may do less, but I'm never going anywhere.
All right. And shout out to
That's the right Chris answer. Connor. Otherwise, I was going to yell at you.
Shout out to Chris Connor, who was supposed to be with us today, but got held up at work. That sucks. But everybody, thanks for listening. Let's dance and let's go Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.